Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Talking about the NFL releasing its schedule, and we're focused on the first week of the season because there are so many different storylines that will be built out over the next several months to think about in that first week. And I'm going to run through some of the most interesting games in my mind from the upcoming beginning of the NFL schedule. But we were talking off the air, Dub, and you were in agreement with me that this game between the Cowboys and the Bucks is about as good of an opening Thursday night game as you could possibly get. And could be up there for one of the most watched openers ever when you think about Tom Brady versus Dak Prescott and all the storylines, plus the return, theoretically, of 100% full stadiums. For many people, football returning to a sense of normalcy will be a big storyline standing alone by itself. Are you with me also about how many people are going to watch this game?
I definitely am. And just on the surface, Tom Brady versus America's team, that's one. But it's Tom Brady, the defending Super Bowl champion Bucks. You got Dak Prescott coming back from his gruesome injury last season and everything in between. I mean, this could be, I think, maybe the most watched season opener in NFL history with fans coming back, full crowds down in Tampa. It's going to be an awesome night.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And then I thought what would be fun in many ways is going through and looking at what maybe are the five or six best games of the opening weekend and trying to contextualize them as a part of this NFL schedule release. And so we know how good that Thursday night football game is, but some of the early Sunday games, like some of them you can dismiss and say, hey, that's something that's not very interesting. And I'll give you a couple of them. Like Jacksonville-Houston. That's an interesting game only if you are intrigued in Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer, maybe Tim Tebow. We're going to talk about Tebow here in a little bit. But the Houston Texans are going to be, I believe, outside of the Deshaun Watson story, one of the least interesting and one of the worst football teams we've seen in a long time. But then you start to run into some of these games and you're like, hey, the Steelers at the Bills? That's an incredible game for 1 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. I mean, I would build a lot of weekends around a game between Ben Roethlisberger coming back off of, I think, a pretty decent season, but starting off 11-0, falling down the stretch, getting wrecked by the Browns. Josh Allen goes from 59% completion percentage to 69%. I'm all in on the idea of the Steelers going up against the Bills. And then you start to run through the Cardinals at the Titans. That's kind of an interesting game, right? Kyler Murray got injured a little bit down the stretch. You've got J.J. Watt making his debut with the Cardinals. The Titans, are they going to fall off in a big way now that they've lost Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith? Everybody's gotten a sense for Ryan Tannehill. I know he had a pretty good year last year, top 10 caliber quarterback. Is Derrick Henry going to be able to continue to carry the load? Can the defense be better for the Titans? That's not an awful game. Jets at Panthers, that's not an awful game, right? I mean, you tell me that Sam Darnold, who had a great deal of futility with the Jets going up against Zach Wilson, brand new Robert Saleh administration in the Jets. They've remade a lot of talent on the offensive and defensive side of the ball already. You've got year two now coming with Matt Rhule with the Carolina Panthers. What would Sam Darnold paired with a now returned and healthy Christian McCaffrey look like? I mean, that's a storyline that I would follow. That's a pretty good game. Then you've got the Chargers on the road against Washington. I'm going to be honest with you. Justin Herbert against Ryan Fitzpatrick. Can Washington solve their quarterback issues with Ron Rivera in year two? If they can, the defense of the Washington football team is as good or better than almost anyone out there. Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, in theory, people are going to say, oh, that's not that great, but Joe Burrow's back. What is Joe Burrow going to be capable of with Ja'Marr Chase, his new big-time wide receiving teammate that he put up unbelievable numbers with LSU just a couple of years ago. For the Vikings, the defense a little bit remade. Kirk Cousins maybe feeling a little bit of pressure from Kellen Mond. That's not an awful game. San Francisco against Detroit. Well, think of all the drama there with Jimmy G, with Trey Lance, with Kyle Shanahan. And then you also roll in the fact that they're going on the road against Jared Goff, making his debut in that new Matt Campbell regime in Detroit. That's a game I would watch. I mean, like, I'm already geeked about all these games. And then we've got the Eagles going up against Atlanta. How good is Kyle Pitts going to be? What is Arthur Smith going to look like now with the new head coach of the Falcons paired up with Matt Ryan? The Eagles, this is Jalen Hurts' team. They've now got Devontae Smith as well. Is Jalen Hurts going to be the guy going into the future? And then you've got, these are all the early games, by the way, the Seahawks going on the road against the Colts. Colts got a new left tackle in Fisher. We'll see, probably not going to be able to play yet, but obviously Carson Wentz making his debut in Frank Reich's entire offense. Is he going to be the Carson Wentz that was MVP caliber in 2017 when he worked the last with Frank Reich? Or is he going to be of himself, that is Carson Wentz? Meanwhile, have the Seahawks sort of solved all the issues in the offseason that they had with Russell Wilson? Or is that going to continue to emerge? Again, other than Jacksonville-Houston, which I think is kind of a dud game, every early game on the NFL opening weekend, I just ran through. That's the 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Pacific. Every one of them I care about. And that's not getting even into the late games. Denver on the road against the Giants. Well, who is Denver's quarterback going to be? Is this going to be Drew Locke or Teddy Bridgewater's team? Or, as I have said for a while, is Aaron Rodgers going to come parachuting in and take over as the head man there? I think that's an interesting question. The Giants, look, Daniel Jones. This is when Daniel Jones has to prove himself. Year three, this is put up or shut up time for Daniel Jones. Green Bay at New Orleans. Guys, these are the late afternoon games. We could have a situation where both Green Bay and New Orleans are going to be replacing Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and we've got a brand new scenario there in terms of what things could look like down in New Orleans. Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill, we don't know who's going to get the start for the first game in the post-Drew Brees era. We don't know if it's going to be Jordan Love. Maybe it could be Drew Locke. Maybe Aaron Rodgers is going to end up paving things over and be okay to come back as a Green Bay Packer fan. You've got to be uncertain about that. But that game can swing in many different directions. Think about this game. The Browns on the road against the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a rematch of their playoff game. Am I signing up for this? Heck yeah, I am signing up for this game. Odell Beckham Jr. back healthy. Baker Mayfield, fifth-year option, picked up. Can the Browns take the next step? They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game. They had a chance to beat the Chiefs after Patrick Mahomes got knocked out of this game. What is going to happen for the Cleveland Browns as they continue to build in year two of Kevin Stefanski? Interesting gamble that they've made to put Jadeveon Clowney on the opposite side of Myles Garrett. Does Clowney have anything left with the Browns? The Chiefs have made a calculated decision to remake their offensive line after the beatdown that Patrick Mahomes took in the Super Bowl and after all the injuries that they had during the course of the season. What moves are going to be made and which ones are going to be successful in that space? I'll tell you, that is a heck of a storyline to be chasing down. That's a monster game for a late window on Sunday. And then how about Miami at New England? I don't think that Cam Newton is going to have given up the starting job to Mac Jones yet. But in possible theory, at least, we could get Tua against Mac Jones, the last two University of Alabama quarterbacks going head-to-head in an NFL opener. What is Tua going to be capable of in year two? They went and they grabbed Jalen Waddle, the Miami Dolphins did. Is he going to be a big difference maker for this Dolphin offense? The Patriots have remade themselves in a big way, most notably at the tight end position with Hunter Henry and with Jonnu Smith. Is Cam Newton, if he's the starter, going to move on from the worst passing numbers of anyone in the NFL, basically, who started 10 or more games last year? Is Mac Jones going to hit the ground running and steal away this job from Cam Newton from the get-go? I mean, that's a heck of a game. And then we get into Sunday Night Football. The Bears going up against the Rams. We don't know who the starter is going to be for the Bears. 50-50, basically, this could be Justin Fields' debut on Sunday Night Football against Matthew Stafford and the Rams. I've talked about this for a while. I love the idea of Matthew Stafford potentially as an MVP candidate in Sean McVay's offense. I think he's going to be wildly outstanding. And then we've got the Ravens on the road against the Raiders. John Gruden reportedly doing everything he can to try to figure out if he can make a run for Aaron Rodgers. There are so many storylines here. I just ran through, other than Jacksonville-Houston, which we're going to talk about in a minute because it involves Tim Tebow, and even that allows a little bit of a storyline. I think we have 15 games out of the 16 opening week NFL games that if you sat down and watched, you'd be like, yeah, this is a I am stoked about being able to watch all these games. And I know there's a lot of people out there talking about a lot of different aspects of the NFL schedule because the NFL owns us to such an extent. But I just think this is a phenomenal roster of games to begin the 2021 NFL season, when I hope and believe that every single NFL stadium that we just ran through is going to be completely full as well.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I am as big of a Tim Tebow fan as there is out there. I loved watching him play with Florida from the moment that he was a true freshman. I loved the exuberance. I loved the passion. I frankly liked the way that Tim Tebow carried himself. I think one reason that Tebow is so wildly popular is because even if he beat your team, which he did in the SEC in particular, Tebow carried himself in a way that was uniquely popular all over the South. I don't know that there has ever been a player that has been more popular in the SEC across the entire conference. Now, there are guys that were wildly entertaining and everybody liked to watch. Joe Burrow, Cam Newton, Johnny Manziel at the quarterback position. But I'm not sure there was anybody who has ever been more liked, particularly because of the amount of games that Tebow won. He won a national championship his freshman year, and they wouldn't have won it without him. I know Chris Leak was the starting quarterback then, but there's no way the Florida Gators win a national championship if they don't have Tim Tebow. He made a lot of huge plays in that season. And by the way, I think that's probably Urban Meyer's best coaching job ever. It's up there. I know the championship he won with Ohio State was impressive as well. But I don't think in the grand scheme of things that Florida Gator team was that wildly talented. And certainly Chris Leak, no offense to Chris Leak, but is one of the least dominant quarterbacks to ever win a national championship in the last 20 years or so. Then Tebow came back his junior year and they won the national championship again, and that was with Tim Tebow driving the team. In his sophomore year, he won the Heisman Trophy. He played 4 years and was undefeated, only lost one game, the game that Nick Saban in Alabama, Tebow cried on the sideline against the Alabama Crimson Tide in that classic, iconic SEC championship game. And I'll tell you this, one of the best things that I have gotten to do as a sports fan is go and be at the Florida-Georgia games down in Jacksonville, Florida. If you're listening to me right now, and every now and then I say it when these games come up, you want to put a fun game on your bucket list. Go to Jacksonville, it's usually right around Halloween week, and go watch Florida and Georgia play in the Jacksonville Jaguar Stadium and see how those two fan bases take over all of Jacksonville. and tell me it isn't one of the most fun sporting events that you can find anywhere in the country. Because if there's anybody out there arguing otherwise, I will tell you, you know what? You are just totally wrong, okay? And Jacksonville, I remember one of the times that I went there for the Florida-Georgia games, the most popular selling t-shirt anywhere in Jacksonville was a Jacksonville Jaguars teal t-shirt. All it said on it was Draft Tebow. That's all it said. And they were everywhere because Tim Tebow is from the Jacksonville area, and everybody out there wanted for somebody to come and be able to get Tim Tebow on that team because it would have totally filled up. I mean, it really would have. It would have totally filled up the stadium early on. Now, I think Tim Tebow's attempt to prove that he could be a high-level quarterback in the NFL, it obviously failed. But Tim Tebow did something that almost no one believed he would ever do. He started in the NFL, and he won a playoff game, and he proved that he could win at a decent level as a quarterback, at least for one season. Now, I do think the NFL teams would have caught up with him. He wasn't consistent enough as a pocket passing quarterback. And that one run that he had with the Denver Broncos was wildly entertaining. The way that they found chances to win, the pass that Tim Tebow hit to Demaryius Thomas against the Pittsburgh Steelers to win a playoff game before they went on the road and then got waxed by the New England Patriots. There's been a lot of people who've gotten waxed by the New England Patriots over the years. But Tebow at the quarterback position in both college and the NFL was an electric, transcendent talent. There's also a little bit of a dark side to Urban Meyer's relationship with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow was such a saint that he was a shield that helped to protect Urban Meyer and the Florida Gator program from all of the arrests off the field that were occurring in the Florida Gator program. You remember Urban Meyer came out and said that he was only going to hire and sign, should say sign instead of hire, the top 1% of the 1%. And then all these different players got arrested and stacked up misbehavior off the field. And many people did not notice or pay attention to it because the storyline of Tim Tebow and what an incredible guy he was dominated so much of that storyline in general. The culture of the Florida Gators, in many ways, was a culture that Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer helped to create. And as soon as Tim Tebow left, that Florida Gator culture collapsed without, I really do believe, the broad shoulders of Tim Tebow to help keep it elevated. Urban Meyer, without Tim Tebow, rides off into the sunset for a year, I think it was, before he ends up back at Ohio State. Urban Meyer left behind a mess at Florida because his win-at-all-cost culture, when it was paired with Tim Tebow, was capable of succeeding. As soon as Tim Tebow was not there anymore, it no longer was able to succeed. So, I wonder on some level whether Tim Tebow is ever going to be able to play at a high level at tight end at the age of 33, coming off of playing baseball for several years, doing something, by the way, at tight end that people had told him he should do for years and that he refused to do because he was a quarterback in his mind. I wonder how much of this, and this is my thesis on what's going on with the idea of Tim Tebow going to Jacksonville, I think this is about Urban Meyer sending a message to the Jacksonville Jaguars using Tim Tebow as a cultural force in the locker room where you know there are going to be a lot of young people. 33 years old in an NFL locker room is old, man. There are not very many 33-year-old players performing at a high level. But if you are Urban Meyer and you know that the future of your team in many ways is directly tied to Trevor Lawrence, and you want to set the best possible culture in that locker room, with all of the young guys that you are bringing in. And I do think Urban Meyer will skew young. And one reason I think he'll skew young is he knows a lot of the young players from having recruited them when he was at Ohio State, but also because young players are less set in their way and they're more likely to listen to what their coach is telling them. And so I think as this is all breaking down and everybody is looking at the larger context of what Tim Tebow is going to represent for Jacksonville, I think he'll make the team. I don't know how much of an impact he will have on the field on a day-to-day basis, but I think this is a play by Urban Meyer from a cultural perspective to set the trend as he believes that trend should be set in the days, the weeks, the months ahead. And he is going back in time and remembering everything that happened and all that was set up when Tim Tebow was playing with the Florida Gators, and that he believes that Tebow will be a cultural force and an impact for good in his locker room in the early part of his tenure when Urban Meyer is the overall culture of the Jacksonville Jaguars. It also wouldn't stun me if Tebow, because of him being such a ridiculous athlete, is able to make some plays, particularly in goal line situations, with his quarterback. Wouldn't stun me either if there's some plays where they put Tim Tebow, for instance, in motion and out of tight end, flip it to him in short yardage back plays. Tim Tebow is one of the best guys I've ever seen at getting a yard or where he needs to get a yard or two that I've ever seen as a runner. Just taking the punishment that can be delivered by all those different NFL linebackers, all those different NFL defensive linemen. Tebow almost never went backwards in short yardage situations. I wonder whether Urban Meyer might find a way to use him in that form or fashion as well. But I am excited about what Tebow is going to be able to do in his return, presuming that he makes the team in the NFL. And you look around and think, man, you know what? What is it going to look like in that first game? Look, this is an awful game, right? To me, Jacksonville's going on the road against Houston. I think there's a very good chance that Trevor Lawrence and the Jags win that game and that Tebow can play and make a play that matters in some sort of significant way against the Houston Texans, because I think what's going to happen is Urban Meyer is going to want to have a reason to justify Tim Tebow being on the team, and I think there will be a play. Maybe it's a jump pass. Maybe it is a trick play snap to Tebow. Maybe it's just in a goal line situation, Tebow gets open and catches a touchdown pass, two-point conversion, something like that down close. I think Urban is going to want to make it clear that in his mind, this is not a stunt, and there will be, in some form or fashion, a play made by Tim Tebow in that opener against the Houston Texans. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars get the win in that game, and I believe that Trevor Lawrence starts with a win in his first NFL game. You think about the mess that is the Texans. We talked about this in the last segment, kind of breaking down week one. Tyrod Taylor, Davis Mills, no way Deshaun Watson is playing in that opening game of the season. I don't think Deshaun Watson's ever going to play for the Houston Texans again. So this is a ripe opportunity for the Houston Texans to be able to come. Going up against the Houston Texans for Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow, Trevor Lawrence, for that brain trust, so to speak, the culture that Urban Meyer is building, for something to happen in a really positive way for the Jags. If I'm Urban Meyer, I'm like, well, we're starting 1-0. There's no way that we are losing to the Houston Texans, Tyrod Taylor and or Davis Mills, whoever is the starting quarterback in that situation. This is the best possible opener, in my opinion, for the Jacksonville Jaguars, for Tim Tebow, who I believe will be on that sideline with Urban Meyer. This is going to be a fun story to follow.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Will, I got to do something cool on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't know if you ever gotten to tour a distillery or ever spend any time around them. I don't know if you're a big bourbon or whiskey guy. It wouldn't surprise me if you are. I've kind of worked my way into being a pretty big fan of both, and I got to go to the distillery in Frankfort for Buffalo Trace, and they make a lot of – they make Weller. You're a Texan. Weller has been a big product down in the state of Texas for a long time. Pappy Van Winkle, like all these different really cool flavors. And it was just an awesome experience to get to go tour the place.
I saw that. I saw you posted about touring the Buffalo Trace distillery.
Yes.
I am not to disappoint you here. Yes, I'm a big bourbon whiskey fan. But I'll give you my power rankings really quickly, Clay.
Yeah.
At number three, Irish whiskey. I do like something about the dry bite of a Jameson when I don't want to taste too much sweetness. But at number two, I will give you bourbon. I like bourbon. And Buffalo Trace, and this is not gratuitous because I'm not getting paid, I think it's a really good bang for your buck, bourbon, Buffalo Trace. But at number one, and I don't know if this makes me fancy pants or Texan, I think it's probably a little bit of both, but at number one is tequila. It has risen to number one for me just in the past, I would say, 18 months.
Really? Yeah.
And no, it's the George Clooney thing, and I think The Rock has a tequila, and everybody has a tequila. Here's what I found, man. Very little hangover, nice happy buzz, tastes great if you buy top shelf. Always buy top shelf. I don't care how snooty that is. If you get yourself a good tequila, it's like drinking dessert.
It is. I mean, I like a little bit of everything, right? So let's be honest. But it is kind of amazing the cycle of what becomes popular, right? Because I was talking about this with the bourbon guys. Bourbon has gotten white hot. Tequila has gotten white hot. Vodka, which I would say was probably your standard, maybe most reliable, maybe liquor back in the day, right? Like that liquor seems to, with vodka, have declined. Meanwhile, bourbon, and they were saying, you know, it's interesting because some people trace the rise of bourbon and whiskey to Mad Men. And he's like, you know, we were talking to the guide as we walked around and looked. He's like, I don't know how much you can attribute to, you know, just kind of cultural standards changing. And certainly with like the 1960s era tight suits, that came roaring back because of Mad Men, the skinny ties, all that stuff. But it is kind of interesting cyclically to think about what cycles up and doesn't. For instance, what you're a Texan. What do you attribute tequila rising on your liquor power rankings having to do with? Is it the quality of tequila is getting better? And then, like, as you get older, you're like, I don't want to necessarily have a hangover from something. Like, what would you attribute it to?
Okay, I love this conversation. So first, I would just attribute it to a sophisticated palate, of course,
yeah,
man. I know
right,
what I'm
right.
doing, and I like it. No, but I'm serious. If I drink a glass of Classe Azul, which is that fancy one in the white and blue ceramic bottle, if I drink a glass of one of those, and I'm not a wine guy. Like, I can't sniff the notes and taste the layers on wine. I don't get that. But I can do that with that tequila. I can taste all the different flavors in there. But let's go to marketing for a minute. So I read this article. I'm somewhat entrepreneurial, not on your level. We know your level of entrepreneurship. Everyone should know at this point, Clay's level of entrepreneurship. But, you know, I love marketing. I love building businesses. So I read this article. I'm going to go 10 years ago to your vodka point. And it was talking about how Red Bull became one of the biggest drinks in the world. And the article was awesome. It said, here you have, what, a 6-ounce drink that is terrible for you and objectively tastes bad. And yet it's a massive market driver. So why? And the answer is all marketing. The guy that created Red Bull made this marketing phenomenon. Gives you wings, you need the energy. And it said in this article, other drinks built upon marketing. And it said Grey Goose vodka. Grey Goose vodka is not better than your normal well vodka. And I thought, that's fascinating. And I told my brother-in-law, who really liked vodka, to your point, about 10 years ago, and he listened to me. He listened to me explain this, and then he ordered a Grey Goose martini. So in other words, the marketing's so strong that I can explain it, and it doesn't matter. Tequila has moved from Jose Cuervo at 2 a.m., let's make sure we walk out of this bar stumbling, to something now that in my 40s, I want to just drink. I don't want to mess it up with any kind of mixer. I just, at most, ice, and it's nice. No hangover, and I can enjoy it. But I can't deny the power of marketing is probably playing some role in there.
Do you know, I got to give credit because iHeart, I don't know if you know Bob Pittman. I know him just a little bit. But he has, if you like tequila, he has a tequila called, Casa Dragones, right? Like basically dragons with an N-E-S.
I've had that.
It's phenomenal,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's really, really good stuff. And I'm kind of like you. I mean, I'm not pretending to have like some incredibly refined palate. And certainly, I've been to a lot of wine tastings over the year. Over the years, like I bet pretty much every husband or boyfriend has at some point. You've been out at a winery, and I think it's fun. But I, you know, like the sophisticated palate, like I don't have the difference, you know, to be able to define every single thing. But I do think you can tell what goes down easy and what doesn't.
Yes, and I'll say this just to show that I'm not proclaiming the sophisticated palate. I'm no snooty beer drinker either. Like, yeah. I don't like IPAs. I don't want a ton of flavor in my beer. I like Miller Lite. I like what it amounts to.
Yeah.
I like ice cold water essentially when it comes to beer.
Yes. That is pretty fantastic. I can tell a little bit with beer. I'm not as great with wine, but I do think the difference on the liquor is what goes down smooth and what doesn't, right? And and so I'm kind of fascinated by that. And anyway, I spent a couple of days this week kind of diving in, and I feel like I have a little bit more knowledge than I did before, which is pretty cool. We're talking to Will Cain, by the way, at Will Cain on Twitter. You can follow him on there. You can listen to his new podcast, which is pretty outstanding. Also, weekend 6 to 10 a.m. with Fox and Friends. And also, this is pretty awesome, you're going to be hosting 7 p.m. Eastern, I believe, next week, your own show. Big time deal, being able to sit behind the wheel, so to speak, and run it. That's going to be awesome.
Man, I'm excited about it. Yeah, I'll be hosting the 7 p.m. Fox News primetime show next week. You know, I'm just going to have to say, let her rip. I'm just going to have to do my thing. You know, like you, I've done a three-hour radio show every day. This is my chance to sort of spread my wings, do what it is I like to do. And I think we'll probably work in Clay Travis at some point.
I'm going to try. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to come on as one of your guests. I'm sure you're going to do a fantastic job, and that's an awesome next step for you to be able to host. I mean, it'll be millions of people watching as that hour is wildly popular, leading into Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham. I mean, just a really big-time collection of talent, and that's awesome for you. So you can check Will out there. All right, speaking of awesome for you, are you excited, apprehensive, are you terrified of the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, returning and going head-to-head with Tom Brady, the opening Thursday night game of the NFL season?
Excited. Take the points. Cowboys plus 6.5, I like it. I really do, Clay, and I know I'm a homer, and I know I just went through the schedule, and I go, 16-1.
Yeah, right.
16-1,
yeah.
They'll lose to the Chiefs. And I'm not stealing Greenberg's bit. I know that I'm really over-optimistic on this schedule. But, yeah, I'm excited to play Tom Brady. I'm excited to play the Bucs. And I do think you should take the points. I think Dak's going to come back roaring strong. He's going to be incredible this year. No one, I don't think any team in the league has surrounded their quarterback with more weapons. And I think the Cowboys are going to score a ton of points. The only question for the Dallas Cowboys is, can they stop anyone on any given drive?
Did you see Brady? I mean, I'm kind of fascinated by this. The Bucs GM came out and said, hey, I think Tom Brady can play till he's 50. He's going to be 44. And we already know that he's basically broken the age dynamic at the quarterback position in the NFL. Even if he only played one more year, there's never been anybody like Brady. How many more years is Tom Brady a starting quarterback in the NFL right now, if I had to set an over-under with you? So we obviously know he's going to play this year.
Well, first, if I'm making predictions, I used to say this when I was on ESPN. Everyone else can leave the party whenever they want. I'm going to hit the lights. So I'm not going to accept that Tom Brady is leaving before anyone else. So Max Kellerman, of course, made his bones on this cliff theory. And here's the thing about Max and his cliff theory. He based that, like some accountant, on an actuarial table. Like he went and he looked at Warren Moon's career and Brett Favre's career and Rich Gannon's career. Anybody that played late in the life, and he realized, well, about 40, 41, no one plays great beyond that.
That's right.
And I used to argue to Max, you know, at some level that makes sense if you're an insurance adjuster. But you are talking about one of the greatest athletes, in my estimation, the greatest team sports competitor, and I mean that. I mean that above other names that other people are getting mad about right now in their head, like MJ. Yeah. I think Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. And I said, you're doing that. You're applying, like, averages to someone who is way beyond average. So if you tell me, can Tom play till he's 50? Why not? He's already, to finish off Max's metaphor, he's already flown over the cliff. He's sprouted wings. Who's going to predict where he lands at this point? He's flying. I wouldn't know, man. Over under, 3 to 4 more years. I mean,
it's wild, right?
I think that's a fair 3 to 4 is a fair over under.
It's wild because for so many years I've sat around and been like, well, I better enjoy this Tom Brady game because we might not see it again, right? Brady versus Rodgers, Brady versus Manning. And if those games end up not happening anymore, and we just saw the most recent Brady Breeze in the postseason, but if those games don't happen anymore, it's not ever been because Brady decides to hang it up. And I just feel like this guy has got – I don't think that's a crazy number. I mean, look, anybody can get injured. We obviously have seen what happens to guys like Alex Smith. Sometimes a devastating injury can happen. Brady lost a season to a knee injury back in the day. But I just feel like his performance down the stretch against the Bucs, even without a lot of time to work with his team because of COVID, this coming season – I mean, I feel like he's going to be off the charts with all the time that he's had to work and with the fact that all 22 starters return.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He had to work himself into that team and those weapons in a shortened COVID training season. What's it like with a full year of training behind him? You would have to just assume better. And by the way, on these predictions about how long he can go, we have to acknowledge that the game is moving in his direction, meaning quarterbacks, as we know, get hit less. The rules favor offensive players, so it's not as hard for him as it was early in his career to complete a pass. Not just how many times he's getting touched, but how many times his receivers are getting touched. So the game is moving in his direction where it's essentially more of a non-contact game, so a 47-year-old could survive.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly how long Brady's going to continue to roll, but we do know, look, when you look at these rookies, we know that Trevor Lawrence is going to start, and one of the guys that may be starting alongside of him is Tim Tebow. How intrigued are you by the idea of Tim Tebow, 33-year-old tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, individually, probably not as intrigued as everyone else. Like, I mean, I'm intrigued more than some other, you know, third, fourth string tight end that they signed. Is it enough to make me go, wow, I'm paying attention to Jags training camp? No. But if he makes the team, yes, I'm much more interested in the Jags. Of course, you know, Clay, I'm intrigued by the ridiculous overreaction to the Jags giving Tim Tebow a shot. That is
yes. Intriguing. Yes. Why do you think that I mean, everything about Tim Tebow, except probably Tim Tebow himself, has been on steroids since he was a freshman at Florida, right? And I've seen this since he was 18 years old, the mania that he creates and has dealt with all the way through. In fact, Will, I mean, we get used to seeing athletes and we get used to seeing celebrities in what we do. I have never seen anything like when Tim Tebow was on Radio Row, right? I mean, Beyonce, Madonna, like they all come through Radio Row at some point in time. But you feel as if there is true electricity in the air relatively rarely. Tebow being on Radio Row the year after, I believe it was, that he won the postseason game with the Broncos against the Steelers, hit Demaryius Thomas on that crossing route in overtime to win that game. I've never seen anything like it. The same thing had happened, by the way, at SEC Media Days when Tebow was in the building, when everybody was losing their minds. And look, you're used to Nick Sabans of the world, Cam Newton, Joe Burrow. I mean, there's lots of big names, Johnny Manziel. I've never seen a reaction, a frenzy like Tebow produces in the world of sports.
Yeah, and there's a couple of reasons. And the first two reasons create lovers and create haters. So for whatever reason, you know, wearing your religion on your sleeve creates haters, but it also creates lovers. You know, I have nephews that grew up in Odessa, Texas. My sons weren't born yet, really, to root for Tim Tebow, and they loved him because he was honest and open about his Christianity.
Yep.
It's odd. I don't totally get it, but that's clearly one of the motivating factors behind why people hate him. It just is, and I can't really explain it. The other number two is this sort of wholesome image, independent of Christianity. People don't like wholesome. They like bad boys. You know, the Cowboys draft, we were talking about Cowboys schedule, but the Cowboys draft, they took a ton of character concerns. And I tweeted about that, like, wow, the Jason Garrett days of Jason Garrett used to use the phrase right kind of guy. Those days are over. And I had a ton of people go, like, who cares? We were good in the 90s when we had bad guys. And what are you? We're not trying to put together choir guys. But those same people, they'll be destroying the Cowboys for drafting these guys if they get suspended.
Oh,
right?
Of course. So, yes.
So, So I don't really know, but there's an attraction to the bad boy and not the good guy that Tim Tebow is from a lot of fans. And then I think his pro career, you talk about after the Broncos win, that's against all odds, against the doubter story, you know, and that's going to make people love and hate you as well. He wasn't supposed to be this good. Everybody's been dogging him. And then finally, it's race. You know, and that's, and I don't, look, the reaction the last 2 days has been 100% about race. You know, his career and his reputation over his life has been about his religion, but the last 2 days, that's been about race. And that's just, the bottom line, Clay, is this. On the people that are mad at Tim Tebow for getting an opportunity because he's white are racist. They just don't see the world through anything but a lens of skin color. That's just how they do it. And at this point, we're going to have to start accepting that's who they are. They are racists, and we need to start calling them out for what they are, racists.
That is a hell of a way to get to a break. Come back with us for like 5 more minutes.
Yep, you got it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Tebow, we were just talking about him, potentially with the Jags. Will Cain hanging out with us to close out the Thursday edition of the program. Will, for a long time, and you know this, there are relatively few athletes you could say that athlete's name is and just say open phone lines and anybody could come in and everybody would have an opinion. Tim Tebow is one of those guys. LeBron James is one of those guys. Probably over time, Tom Brady has turned into one of those guys. Johnny Manziel used to be one of those guys. A lot of these guys are very polarizing, but most of them have a reason for you to dislike them, right? Like, they've done something. Your point on Tebow is so well said. Like, the guy is basically without flaw, yet that same persona makes him incredibly polarizing. I'm using, as an example, Johnny Manziel, both SEC quarterbacks. Johnny Manziel, before we knew whether or not he was going to be a success in the NFL, everybody had a strong opinion of him, right? But Johnny Manziel had done a lot of things where you could be like, okay, I love this dude. I hate this guy. LeBron James, everybody has an opinion on him. He's done a lot of things. Tiger Woods was another guy like that just moved the needle, right? Everybody had an opinion.
Right.
Really, Tebow has never done anything. Like, what's the worst thing you can say that Tim Tebow's ever done? I'm not even sure we can come up with a reason that bad thing that Tim Tebow's ever done in the public eye.
No, and then therefore the reaction, you know, Tim Tebow's like a Rorschach test, the ink blot test. You see in it what you want to see in it, and the truth is your reaction to Tim Tebow says more about you than it says about him. You are revealing who you are in your reaction to Tebow. I truly believe that. And by the way, I love your examples, and if you didn't use Woods, I was going to bring up Woods, and then, of course, in the sort of pre-viral age, Michael Jordan. And with Jordan and Woods, they were hot topics, phone lines light up, without really being controversial. I'm talking about before Woods' sex scandals.
Yeah,
you know, it was more just about who he was as a golfer, and people could listen or talk about Tiger all day just based upon his greatness, not unlike Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think it's just – that's what I've always found so amazing about the Tebow experience, because coming out of college, there have been – the SEC, for college football in particular, can make big seismic stars, right? Particularly as the teams have gotten more and more dominant, and so you can run through guys. I mean, you're a Texas Longhorn guy, but Vince Young was an example of one of these guys that came into the NFL with a massive legacy with him. But the Cam Newtons, the Tim Tebows, the Johnny Manziels, a little bit of the Joe Burrows, guys who just had such transcendent seasons or such iconic plays that they sort of entered into the league with a legendary mantle attached to them. And I've never seen anything like the amount of people who just rooted desperately against Tebow. And there certainly are a lot of people that root for him, but to me, it's always a lot easier to understand why a guy can have fans than why a guy can have haters. And the Tebow hate has just never made sense to me.
No, it really.
I mean, if you had a daughter and she married Tim Tebow, or if you had a son and he grew up like Tim Tebow, I think almost every single person listening to us would be like, yeah, I'd be pretty happy about the way that I had parented. And I've gotten to know Tebow quite a bit, just kind of casually over the years since that. And he doesn't seem to me to be an artificial guy. Like, he just kind of is the person in his public life. It seems to me very similar to the one that he is in his private life.
That's the key. They want to believe it's literally too good to be true. That is fake. They want to believe it's a televangelist situation where secretly Tim Tebow is doing something that takes down this too good to be true, good guy, wholesome Christian image. I mean, that would be their favorite story that came along in quite some time. But you had more interaction with Tim than I have. I've had some through our ESPN employment, and I've never seen a crack in the facade. I've never seen that it is fake in any way. So they'll have to keep holding their breath on that. Hey, you brought up Texas. Here's a quick story. I know we're getting ready to leave. You know when Texas will be back?
When will
Texas
that be?
Texas will be back when name, image, and likeness is fully in place. Because, boy, that's going to benefit the big boys. You brought up the SEC making stars. Texas has brand. Texas has attention, its own network and money. When name, image, and likeness comes in, Texas will be back.
That's an interesting point. I'm fascinated to see what name, image, and likeness does for so many different programs out there, not just the big schools, but also the small schools, because I think the big fish in a small pond factor could happen for, you know, like Southern Miss could end up with a five-star who's from near Hattiesburg, for instance. I'm just tossing Southern Miss out in a way they would never go to a school like Southern Miss. Maybe they would if they can get a car dealership deal, which is different than maybe being the 20th best guy on the Alabama roster. I'm fascinated. We'll break that down next week, because I do think the name, image, and likeness is fascinating.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.